Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Colonel Ray LaRue was in love with flying since he was a little boy. He built model planes and spent idle time daydreaming about someday flying his own. From a first moment of controlling a plane, he could never have daydreamed that one day he would be flying presidents and world leaders. He's just written his memoir entitled Inside Marine One, Four U.S. Presidents, One Proud Marine, and the World's Most Amazing Helicopter. It is a great pleasure to welcome Colonel Ray Frenchy LaRue to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. So give us a sense of why you wanted to tell this story and the pride that comes of wanting to share this experience with others.
Well, it's a great story to be told, first of all. And I think from a mentor standpoint, I think today we lack mentors, and I had plenty of good ones, which is why I ended up where I was. And I really never had the gumption to write a book or even tell the story, but as many high schools or Rotary clubs that I've spoken to and anecdotally relayed some of the experiences, you always get the folks coming up afterwards, oh, you should really capture these stories and write a book. And I said, sure, why not? But really kind of gaffed it off a bit. And then I reached out to President Bush and kind of got a pulse as to what he would. I would never have done the book without his support, obviously. And one thing led to another, and a couple of years of putting it together, and here it is.
You talk about the time of where things changed for you. You were a Marine. You are flying, and you're moving along just fine in the Marine Corps. And then you're at an airfield when President Reagan lands, and really everything changes.
You really never had the premonition that you would end up in the elite squadron. We all knew as Marine helicopter pilots, as young as we were, that squadron did exist, but it was still somewhat mysterious as how do you enter or how do you apply. And then to see that one event, a lift that involved President Reagan in Southern California, and just the choreography, the ballet, the whole hype, moving the president around, the Secret Service, the staff, it was absolutely spectacular from my point of view. And I vowed then, I said, I got to figure out a way how to get into this unit.
How many pilots are ultimately in that unit at any given time?
It's a fairly comprehensive group of pilots because the mission is global and it's 24/7, 365. So you've got commitments all over the planet, and you have to have the resources, meaning pilots and crew chiefs, to be able to do that. So there's quite a number of them.
So in any given time, let's just take a year, is there an average of the number of times that you would be flying the helicopter?
Yeah, it was as a squadron pilot, which I'll start off by saying one of the prerequisites of being the commander of the unit, which I was during the Bush last years of the Bush 43 and Obama, first 6 months of Obama, you had to have been there as a youngster. So I was there as a squadron pilot, and you generally fly in co-pilot roles and other missions. But as the commander, your billet description or title is presidential helicopter pilot. And you do about 85% of all the heavy lifting. The other 15 is done by four senior pilots that you designated to do it in your stead because you can't be everywhere at once. But you are gone a lot, let's just put it that way.
You flew Presidents George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, then you become commanding officer flying President George W. Bush, and then Barack Obama, as you mentioned. Is there anything that you lose in becoming commanding officer, or do you gain a lot in that?
Well, you know, it's funny, and I think I captured pretty well in the book. It's that when I was a squadron pilot and then looking at the two commanding officers that I had in that squadron, you don't fully appreciate the responsibility that they had. You're just enjoying where you are. The mission is cool. You're doing the business at hand. It isn't until you matriculate into that position, and I never thought that that would happen, but it did. The timing was off was right. And just the, again, that responsibility. The flying part's cool, the mission is cool, the travel is cool, but at the end of the day, you've got, you know, a squadron of 850 kids. Aviation is inherently dangerous in itself, even though this is a zero-fail mission. And you've got a lot of moving parts of this unit going all over the globe. So the responsibility, making sure everything is, again, flawless, is somewhat daunting.
What is the requirement for the president to use Marine One? What is necessary for that particular piece of equipment to be used?
There's actually two really scenarios that we schedule those flights by, and it's really done through the White House staff, and they decide that that's the mode of transport that's going to be necessary. But we refer to it as inside the Beltway and outside the Beltway. And outside the Beltway is the rest of the globe, quite frankly. And administratively, it just makes more sense logistically from a safety and security standpoint. And time-wise, inside the Beltway, to fly the president to Andrews Air Force Base or local events or certainly Camp David, it just makes more sense. You start shutting roads down inside Washington, D.C., people are going to get picked off pretty quickly. And that stands for the rest of the places that we do take the helicopter and provide that support to the president.
And traditionally, these are what we would call, I think, hops, right? I mean, they're not excessively long trips.
Yeah, exactly. We call them, a presidential lift, which is the vernacular that we use. And you're right, it can be called a hop. And it can be anywhere from 5 minutes all the way up to, I think, the longest flight that I've ever had with a president on board is just over 45 minutes.
The subtitle of the book is Four U.S. Presidents, One Proud Marine, and the World's Most Amazing Helicopter. What, in your idea, in your mind, makes this the world's most amazing helicopter?
That's a great question, and it's not because of how it's tricked out. Certainly, there's fourth-generation helicopters being produced that private or that corporate America could fly or whatever that are very, very posh. But what makes this helicopter unique and amazing is the mission that it has and the recognition that it gets globally. When you see the iconic paint job with a white top, United States flag, United States of America painted on the side, that's a presence. And when it is flying around anywhere, even in this country or abroad, people know exactly why that helicopter is there.
You mentioned 365 days, 24/7. So what is your off time like? Because you're just sort of waiting for the call, right?
Right. And because you have a number of folks in the squadron, somebody's always on duty, again, around the clock and around the calendar. When you do have time off, you learn to exploit it. And sometimes it's not often. I can probably count on one hand the amount of weekends that I had off when I was the commander. But that, you accept that. I mean, that's part of the job, and you do it willingly.
In the book, you talk about not only transporting presidents, but also world leaders. You transported the Pope. I mean, it is used for other dignitaries as well, and that must be amazing to you, because you are serving your country at that moment. How much of it can you actually soak in and enjoy?
Well, I mean, certainly just the mere fact that you're flying that particular mission, that you enjoy that. I mean, you have to, obviously, when the mission's going or taking place, you take care of business, but it's not far from your mind exactly what it is that you're doing. With regards to the Pope is actually, and that was probably one of the more memorable opportunities that I had, and I might even say privilege, that the Pope is considered from the State Department a head of state. The Holy See is a state, and it's the only head of state that, when visiting this country, gets that kind of support outside the Beltway. And that's merely because of the crowds that the Pope will draw, the security that surrounds that type of an event. And, when you fly in the Pope, and this was in the book I mentioned, World Youth Day in Denver in 1994, we were landing abreast the old Mile High Stadium. And the din of the rotors, you got a headset on, the helicopters in the cockpit. Not, these are pretty soundproof helicopters, but still noisy. But when we were landing, you could hear the crowd that basically filled Mile High Stadium, and that's the kind of reception that the Pope gets anywhere we take him.
And there's that point, and this is back to an earlier question, but there is that point, I assume, where you look and say, okay, the Pope is in the passenger seat.
Yeah, you know you're pretty safe, actually.
It's a pretty good feeling, I would assume, sure.
Yeah. In fact, my grandmother was a one of those Boston blue-blooded Irish Catholics from Boston, and, you know, it didn't matter if I flew presidents or not. The fact that I had flown a Pope, her life was complete at that point.
At what point, how much of the decision for you to retire was yours, and or was it all your decision?
Mostly. I mean, you have to come to that crossroads and the things that I had done in the career. I was also, my last active duty job was here as the chief of staff at Marine Forces Pacific, which is in Honolulu, Hawaii. And I didn't want to move again. So you make that decision, quality of life. And I knew that whatever was going to come next was not going to top what I had just done. So it was a conscious decision.
And day to day, is it possible to put into words of what you miss about it?
You know, I miss the people, first of all. I mean, it's just the sons and daughters of America that made up that unit that day to day came into work and just loved what they did, loved the patch that they wore in their flight suit. But certainly what I miss, and I said this to many people, is that, you know, when you're flying above Washington, D.C. at 200 feet, doesn't matter what time of day or what the climate is, and you're coming up the Potomac and you make that right turn at the Washington Monument and you set up to land on the backyard of the White House, you never get sick of that. And I certainly miss that particular event.
Well, the book is fascinating, and it is entitled Inside Marine One, Four U.S. Presidents, One Proud Marine, and the World's Most Amazing Helicopter. Colonel Ray LaRue, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
You betcha. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much for taking the time with us. Again, it's Inside Marine One. It's published by St. Martin's Press. Colonel Ray Frenchy LaRue is the author of the book. Again, it's Inside Marine One. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.